Welcome to the School of Hollywood. I'm Steve Owens, your host. I interview celebrities in Hollywood and talk about their success and how they got to the current status. So if you like the podcast, please share it with your friends and give us a like.
Hi, this is Steve Owens with Entertainment World and School of Hollywood podcast. And we've got Terry Knickerbocker here with us. We're excited to have you here. You're one of the top acting coaches in New York City, and you own the Terry Knickerbocker Studios. How long have you been coaching acting?
30, 40 years, something like that. I don't know. I started in earnest in the early 90s, but I was doing it a little bit before then as well. And it kind of coincided with my teaching career. So I kind of lived two professional lives. I have a school, the Terry Knickerbocker Studio, where I teach actors who want to learn how to act to be really good actors. And I also taught at NYU for many years. And then side by side with that, I coach usually actors who already have a role. Occasionally I'll coach someone for an audition or a callback, but most of my coaching work is with people who've already booked roles. And as you know, in film and television, there's usually very little, if any, rehearsal. And so a lot of actors will go to a coach to help them prepare for roles so that when they show up on set, they're ready to go.
Well, you actually coached one of my favorite actors, Daniel Craig, Mr. James Bond 007, for his Knives Out. How do you approach somebody that is so that big in entertainment and say, hey, I'm going to teach you something?
Well, I don't propose to be teaching them, right? That's a different function. So I'm not trying to teach anybody I coach how to act. And in fact, it's very helpful if they already know how to act. I have had to coach some people who don't know how to act, and then that's a double job. So with Daniel, you're quite right. Daniel is an extraordinary actor and a really thoughtful and passionate and very well-prepared actor. And just to make a slight correction, and I think this is important, I didn't coach him for Knives Out. I coached him for Knives Out 2, which was The Glass Onion. So that was very interesting because I loved his performance in Knives Out. And we'd been sort of flirting around, working together, because he's a good friend of Sam Rockwell's, who I've been coaching for probably the longest time of anyone I've been coaching, 30 years. And Sam was always recommending me to his friends, and often those people become clients. And so I'd met Daniel a few times and he'd sent me a script that ultimately he didn't end up. And then one day he said, I want you to help me with Knives Out too. And my first meeting with him, I kind of tried to talk him out of hiring me because I was there like, I loved what you did in Knives Out. I don't think you need any help. Why would you need my help? You already figured that out so beautifully. I don't want to mess it up. And he said, well, I don't want to repeat myself. And I want to make sure that this one is, that I'm not just sleepwalking through it. And I want to make sure it's really good. And so we spent a lot of time working on, I thought, a beautiful script. Staying, like, he didn't make a new character. That character was already established. Mm-hmm. But getting very specific into new people that he's working with, because it's a whole new cast and new relationships and what it was like to fly to Greece, especially during the pandemic, and do this and basically be that same character, same mannerisms, same voice, but in new circumstances, and just really making it specific.
You mentioned Sam Rockwell. He picks a lot of diverse roles out there. What's his process of breaking down the scripts and becoming those kinds of characters?
You're spot on with how you're understanding Sam, and especially your use of the word pick, because one of the things that Sam says that's very powerful is that your greatest power as an actor is the ability to say no. And so he, at this point, I don't think he's auditioned in 10 years, not longer. He's mostly just getting offers. But even when he was auditioning, if he got a part that didn't feel right, he would say no. So first there's the picking part, and he's really trying to have a body of work that is varied, that is sometimes funny, that is sometimes very dark, and he's very intentional about that. So he doesn't like to keep playing the same part all the time. And then his process, he got a very interesting process. He has an encyclopedic relationship to film, and especially to great films of the 70s and 80s. So his heroes are people like Jack Nicholson, Gene Hackman, Meryl Streep, Diane Keaton, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, Dustin Hoffman, all those great movie actors, not just those people, but that's like his sweet spot. And when he reads a role, when he reads a part, and often he'll have me read it as well before he even necessarily says yes. So sometimes we're consulting on like, what's my take on it? He's going to start to have associations to, oh, this is kind of like, Ethan Hawke in this movie, or Denzel Washington in that movie, or Gene Hackman in The Conversation, or John Cazale in Godfather. And it starts to become kind of a patchwork quilt, like a chef making a stew of a little bit of that and a little bit of that other one to create this new role. So for instance, when he played George Bush in Vice, Elvis was in there a little bit. Not only Elvis, but there was a little bit of Elvis in there. And that became interesting, yeah.
Do you find that star actors have a tendency to fall back into their money-making role, or is it their own style, like a Julia Roberts, Sandra Bullock, which they pretty much play the same kind of girl next door character and all the roles that they play?
Well, I would disagree with you about, like, Julia Roberts in that movie about the Watergate thing, or the podcast that turned into a show that was very dark that Sam Esmail put together. I think she's coming into her stride. I think for a long time, definitely Pretty Woman, and like her early roles was kind of this nice, pretty, innocent. I mean, she really was good at that. But now she's really starting to do some very interesting character work and some dark stuff. I mean, I thought her work as Martha Mitchell in that piece about the White House plumbers and Watergate was unbelievable. And Sean Penn as John Mitchell, I mean, the prosthetics alone were crazy, but thought she surprised me. So I wanted to stand up for Julia Roberts because I was never a huge Julia Roberts fan. And now I'm there like, I can't wait to see what she does next, because she's starting to put together some very rich and provocative work. Fall back on their money roles. Tell me one more what you mean about that, Steve.
So for example, an actor is done very successful as a series regular and they have a certain character that they play, and then they have a hard time auditioning for anything else other than just that character that they've latched onto for so many years.
So I think that's at least partly about the business and how the business doesn't always have the imagination. Like, we tend to go with what we know. So when James Gandolfini did The Sopranos for 7 years, all the parts he was being offered were to play gangsters. And to his credit, he said no to most of those because he doesn't want to be put in a box. I think the fun of being an actor is that you get this opportunity to play all these different parts. I mean, to me, creative death would be playing the same part for 20 years. You'd have a lot of money, but where's all the cool stuff you get to do? It's like, you know, when you're in a repertory company, which we don't really have anymore, but back in the day, all the regional theaters were companies, and you'd play 5 or 6 different parts in a season. And that's how you get to be a good actor, is by playing all these different parts. So you sometimes have to push it. Look at what Matthew McConaughey did. He did all those rom-coms. And then at a certain point, he said, I'm pivoting. And for, I think, 2 years, he turned down millions and millions of dollars because he was an incredibly successful rom-com guy, right? Until he could get something like Dallas Buyers Club. I think it really started with the Lincoln Lawyer, but right, where he said, no, I want to do something more serious. So it often takes a brave actor and a brave representative, an agent or a manager, and a great imaginative casting director, and a brave director is going to say, oh, this person's going in another direction. That seems like a big risk. I don't even know if the audience will come around, and I don't even know if the actor can do that. Who thought that after all those rom-coms, those basically fluffy, lightweight things that Matthew McConaughey did and did very well, that he was going to do Dallas Buyers Club, which of course won him an Oscar. I mean, like, that's cool. So you do have to be willing to get out of the box. Hopefully you do that because you want to act and you want to do all kinds of parts. And you also have to buck. I mean, he turned down a lot of money for a long time, right? I think he turned out a $12 million movie.
Woo.
Yeah, which would be tempting. $12 million is nice.
Exactly.
But he's saying no. But he was saying, and he had a family. But he's saying, hey, no, my art is going in another direction. This is who I want to be. And he was very clear about that.
In Los Angeles, we really don't have the plays like you guys do in New York. What, in your opinion, is the big difference between Broadway acting, film acting, and TV acting?
Well, you do have some plays. I have a person I coached who's about to be in POTUS at the Geffen, which was a big hit here on Broadway. So there is some good theater in Los Angeles. But you're right, the main engine of entertainment out there is film and television. I think it's about size, right? That, you know, you wear a mic as a film actor, a TV actor, it'll pick up everything. And so this conversation that you and I are having, I'm at my studio now and people in another room can't hear it. So you can end up doing very intimate things. That doesn't mean you have to be small to be a film and TV actor. You look at Gandolfini again, or Bryan Cranston. These are actors who are not afraid, you know, Kate Winslet. I mean, like, you have all these movie actors doing TV now, and you have a lot of stage actors who do film and TV. Denzel Washington will do an Iceman Cometh on Broadway or a Fences on Broadway. And I do believe that our best actors come from the stage and return to the stage. And so I think the stage keeps you honest. And I think you become a better film actor by performing in front of a live audience. Sarah Paulson's on Broadway right now doing an amazing job in this beautiful play, very provocative play called Appropriate. I think, I'm pretty sure she's going to win the Tony. It's just a masterful performance. Well, Sarah Paulson is an amazing film and TV actress. But being on Broadway every night, Denzel doing Fences every night, right? When Frances McDormand did Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which she won the Oscar for, and Sam Rockwell won Best Supporting Actor. She had just played Lady Macbeth, which she later did the film of for Apple TV with Denzel. She did in San Francisco. Denzel wasn't in that. She said that working on Lady Macbeth made doing the mother that she played in Three Billboards like a walk in the park. It was like doing heavy weightlifting, so that when she came to that movie, which is an amazing movie with a script by Martin McDonagh and written by Martin McDonagh and directed by him, it was like, I'd already done the reps. So I think it's about size. I think it sets actors up who do theater to do really powerful film and television. But you can't, you know, if they're doing your close-up and your behavior is meant to like be to the second balcony, and you've got very interesting behavior in your foot, which works on stage, that camera's not going to see it. So you really have to understand the frame and the size of things. But I've coached Sam on three Broadway shows and a couple shows at Williamstown here up in Massachusetts. We don't coach any differently for that and for the 100 plus movies and TV shows that I've coached him for. There's no different process. It's just when he's on stage versus when he's in front of the camera, how it comes out is a little bit different, but the actual work itself is identical.
Do you have any advice for actors on doing Zoom auditions?
Get used to it. You know, it's so weird. I mean, as we know, the pandemic basically let almost all casting offices let go of their lease. And there are occasionally, I coached two actors recently who had in-person auditions for a new Noah Baumbach film that they wanted to do with a casting director in an office. And that's the benefit of what used to be, which is that you'd get adjustments. So if you brought something in and you'd go into, you know, some casting director's office, and if it was off, they'd say, well, let's do it again. You're doing this guy too friendly. This guy's actually a little bit meaner than that. You go, oh, okay, and then you could do it again. When you do a self-tape, Zoom is interesting because Zoom is also live, right? And you can work to the camera. The trick is, like, if I was doing a Zoom audition with you, right now I'm looking at your face, but the camera's not going to see me doing what it needs to do. So when you do a Zoom audition, you need to look at the green light that I have here on my monitor. I see you out of the corner of my eye, but for me to really come across, I have to look at that green light. So that's a little bit weird. What most actors are doing is not a Zoom audition. Most of them are doing self-tapes. So they'll get some sides. They'll say, please submit, slate it. And it has to be submitted by Tuesday. And then you have to put it on tape. The advantage to that is that you can do as many takes as you want. You can get someone to be your reader instead of being stuck with the reader they might have had at the casting office, which might be someone helpful and might be someone who's bored, which makes it a little harder to do your work. So you get to do it 100 times. I wouldn't say stress out about it because you don't want to let perfection be the enemy of the good. Mm-hmm. But it gives you a chance, if you flub a line or if you don't like how it came out, to do it again. But as I say, the disadvantage is, and you need good equipment. That's a weird thing. Actors never used to have to think about that. What's my backdrop? What's my mic? Do I have my ring light? So you have to get good at being your own, you know, tech person as well. But it's all practice.
Somebody wants to join your company. What's the process that they have to go through?
Firstborn child? No. thank you for asking. Every acting studio has their own niche and what they do. A lot of people, for instance, in LA focus very much on the business. So you'll have like comedy classes there, or on camera classes, or how to book an audition classes. And those are all useful. I like to think of my studio as an affordable alternative to a top level MFA program. So we offer conservatory training, and it's a long process. It's a 2-year process for the most part. We also do some shorter, like intensives, like we have a 6-week summer intensive or a 9-week fall or a spring intensive. But as someone who taught at NYU for many years, which has a wonderful program, and I'm a graduate of NYU, I think that longer conservatory, like that's who you're going to be auditioning against. You're going to be auditioning against people who went to Yale and Juilliard and NYU, which are, and USC, some of the best schools out there. And that's a 2 to 4 year experience. So a lot of acting schools, you can just go online, fill out an application, give me your credit card, and you're in class. That's not how we do it. Because having my name on the studio, I want my name to mean something. And so if we just took anybody, we'd probably have more students, but they wouldn't necessarily work out. And one of the complaints that serious actors have about taking acting classes at some other places is, I had this partner and like, they never showed up, or they didn't know their lines, or they weren't so reliable. So we like to meet people and have a conversation. I have a wonderful director of admissions, Christopher Booth, and we want to find out what you're looking for. And we want to see if what you're looking for aligns with what we're offering. And if it does, then we can go forward. And you know, we almost try to talk people out of it because it's a huge commitment. And people these days, if I can make a generality, a generational generality, aren't really interested in spending 2 years because they go like, oh my God, I'm going to miss pilot season. And I want to go to this party and meet someone. So it depends what your goal is. If your goal is to be a working actor, there are all kinds of ways to become a working actor, including growing your Instagram followers. If your goal is to be really good, then a school like mine might be just what you're looking for, because that's who we want to work with, are people who really are passionately committed to being the best actors they can be, because I believe that if you're really good, you will have a very successful career.
Well, that wraps another School of Hollywood. I hope you enjoyed it today, and if you did, please give us a like and tell your friends about it. Until next time, school is out.